Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
New federal legislation announced last week could deem femicide a first-degree murder offense. It also makes coercive control a crime. That is when a partner sustains a pattern of control, threats, or humiliating behavior against another person, usually a woman. On today's show, Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, will unpack what this means for abused women in Northumberland. Will it make the county a safer place for women? Plus, she will also look back at November and talk about Woman Abuse Prevention Month. It is wonderful to have back on Consider This Northumberland, Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. Good to see you, Nancy Johnson.
Good to see you too, Robert. Thanks for having me.
November 25th marked the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Then there was the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence that followed. This was punctuated on December 6th, marking the 35th anniversary of L'École Politique massacre, where 14 women were killed and 14 others injured during a shooting spree. Are these commemorative days, weeks, and months having an impact on people's perceptions of gender-based violence?
I think they do. I think, though, that the narrative and the discussions that we're having about gender-based violence are not just happening in November or December anymore. I think there's a lot more attention given to the topic and the issue of intimate partner violence and gender-based violence in a way, really, that we haven't seen for decades, I would say. And, you know, I think that that's a good thing in some way, Robert, that I think we've gotten the ear of government. I think we've gotten the ear of communities that is important for sure. Having said that, though, I think, you know, commemorating those, you know, December 6th is important for Canada, is important for, you know, for the women who died on that tragic day in 1989, and certainly a day that I will always remember. So yeah, I think the dialogue is happening more readily, which is, in my opinion, a good thing to bring the issue, I think, out of the closet in a way that it has been treated for many decades, I think.
What are your most recent stats?
Last year, our last fiscal year, we served over 3,000 women, children, and youth. So that certainly includes our prevention program, which our prevention programs in the school, as you know, are not targeted. They're universal prevention programs. But, you know, again, we know our shelter is full all the time. Our community services across Northumberland County, upwards of 300 individual women for sure. So it's busy for sure. The need is great.
And the trend compared to previous years is continuing to climb, and at what rate?
Yeah, I think it's pretty comparable for over the last few years anyways, Robert, for sure. Not huge spikes, shall we say. We did receive good news from the government that we did receive an increase in funding for our family court support worker, which was an increase that we've been looking for a long time, because it's a really busy program. And it's a really important program because what we know, women are most at risk at the point of separation. So it's an important time that we can get in there and do intervention with women and provide wraparound services, which we do at Cornerstone. So that was some good news that we had in the last couple of months.
In your press release, it says that there were more than 35 femicides reported over the past year. You said in that press release that gender-based violence remains high across Ontario. Why do you see it being so high?
I think a few things that we've talked about, Robert, for sure, is I think we're living in some challenging times right now, in terms of how women are perceived, in terms of relationships between men and women, in terms of political climate, a huge amount of intolerance. I think economically, I think that puts a lot of extra stress as well on families for sure. Yeah, I think it's there's some complex times, and as you and I have talked about too, Robert, is the impact of COVID, and we're still seeing some of that residual impact of COVID, particularly with kids. And particularly with women and sort of the traumatic response of COVID and needing to be, isolated in their home, which furthered sort of coercive control and the impacts of that on families, I think was great.
We've mentioned these factors before, and the list seems to be pretty similar each time. Is there
Yeah.
something, though, that's different in your mind, that one of those factors is more prevalent, or there are different influences that are shaping those factors that may be different between now as compared to before?
Nothing that I can really put my finger on exactly, Robert. I think perhaps we're living in a society with a little bit less tolerance.
Wait, what do you mean by that? Less tolerance.
I would like to think that in communities, we're still looking out for each other and helping each other out, and not blaming people, not blaming victims. But sometimes, you worry about that. I worry about that.
Why does it make you worry?
I worry about the impact of, that type of narrative on vulnerable people, and I include, women and children experiencing violence, of not feeling like they'll be believed, or they're not heard, or they're further isolated, or they don't want to speak out. I think our criminal justice system has a lot of work to do. I think, as we've talked about before too, women and children living in shelters for far too long. That's a whole other challenge onto itself. So, yeah, I think there's some challenging times. Yet at the same time, I have to say, when there are challenging times, I'm also boosted by the amount of discussions that are happening across Canada, on issues of gender-based violence.
That's a nice segue into what I want to talk to you about next, which is last week, the federal government announced a new crime bill, C-16, that includes some major changes when it comes to violence against women and children. It starts with naming femicide in the criminal code. Can you tell us what is femicide? You've used the term now a couple of times, and why is this significant?
Yeah, I think it's important because it specifically recognizes the crime as an extreme form of gender-based violence rooted in systemic discrimination and misogyny. And as I said, I think it's important that we're naming it as femicide instead of a generic gender-neutral term like homicide. And I think that distinction is really crucial because, again, it allows us to understand the issue, to track it, and hopefully to prevent the killing of women.
By putting it into the criminal code, there's a couple of outcomes that are different than before. And one of them is that the person who is convicted now faces the same sentencing as somebody who has committed a homicide. Why is that significant in your mind?
Because I think oftentimes sentencing was watered down because of the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator. We saw that a lot, right? Just out of the nature of that relationship, that the sentencing would not be so severe.
I also noted that it doesn't matter if it was planned or deliberate. It's still going to be considered a crime.
I thought that that was an interesting, that was an important distinction.
Another aspect of this legislation is coercive control. Now, many people may not be familiar with that term. Can you explain what that is and what this new legislation is going to do to address this?
So the best way to describe coercive control is it's a pattern of generally cumulative acts committed over a period of time, and it's really about controlling behavior, right? So it's often trying to define coercive and controlling behavior is really the reason that keeps so many women in an abusive relationship. It's often not tied to physical violence. It's more about controlling and dominating you, one person over the other. So it's all those things here you hear about, Robert, around, emotional abuse, financial control. So it's coercive and controlling behavior, which controlling behavior, I think people are more, it's easier to understand that.
It sounds to me like this is going to depend a lot on what how the police and the Crown attorneys are going to move forward when laying charges. What is your sense of the local police and the local courts in terms of their willingness to charge people?
I mean, oftentimes there are charges for sure. I think again, sort of figuring out how police are going to look at incidents of coercive control, I think is really, really complex, and it really will require a bit of a shift of how that's being determined. So I think it's something to watch quite closely. Yes, I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. What this new what Bill C-16 will do. However, I think it's really important that the federal government is also listening to women advocates and scholars around gender-based violence to hopefully get this right, that it can make a difference. I think it can, Robert, but I think we need to be working together and really listening to each other as to fully understanding how this looks.
So when you look at the cases Cornerstone deals with, will these legal changes impact gender-based violence locally?
I hope so.
Well, you've spoken positively about the legislation. What else is needed? What's missing?
I don't think we're going to, I criminal justice plays one part, and we've talked about this before, Robert, for sure. Criminal justice plays one part. I still believe really heavily in prevention. I think we're still not reaching kids early enough. I think we're still not having enough critical conversations with our young boys and young men. We did have a staff person trained in a new program that's rolled out across the province called Coaching Boys into Men. And we have started to have some conversations with our local minor hockey league, hoping that we can get in and do some training with coaches. For coaches to start having conversations with young boys and girls in the dressing room around issues such as consent such as impacts of social media with young boys and girls. So that's a program that we believe in really strongly. I think prevention is critical. I think prevention is something that finally the provincial and federal government are talking about and getting behind of actually of funding those. So the Coaching Boys into Men is a program that was funded through the provincial government through a shelter in Interval House in Hamilton that we are partnering with. So I think we're getting there. I think a lot more needs to be done. But as you know, Robert, in our many conversations over the year, prevention was never funded provincially or federally. So it is showing up at both levels. So we're excited about that because it's absolutely critical. We also know that, issues of poverty affect women and their ability to get out of relationships and stay out of relationships. Housing, as you and I have had so many conversations around that. That's a critical piece of the puzzle. So yeah, there's always lots of work to do. I think education is critical, something that I think Cornerstone does a lot of. We try to, again, continue to do education. We've done a lot with our police services. We continue to do training with paramedics because we see paramedics as first responders who are often going into homes. So we're working really closely with Northumberland paramedics under Susan Brown. Susan was right on board when we proposed this to her. So we've been working with them over the last year. Our staff also just went and did some training with Cobourg Fire Department for the same reasons that, again, the more of us that can identify what is happening and to ask women and make sure that women have the information that they need, those things are all a step in the right direction. We've always said we can't fix this alone. We need our community. And I think we're doing more and more. And I think in many ways our community is standing up, such as these first responders. They're coming to us when we say we want to do training with them. They're super invested in it. And that's a big step in the right direction, I think, Robert, as well as Northumberland Hills Hospital. As you know, I've come on and talked about the Ryan Inquest. And one of the recommendations was to be doing more training with healthcare, with first responders. So it's something that we've been committed to doing. So we did some e-learning modules for Northumberland Hills Hospital, all the staff, because that's the best way to reach them, because of course it's a very large staff group and they all work shifts. So they have been receiving those e-learning modules. So that was an important and exciting initiative that we've taken with our local hospital over the last year.
You mentioned about getting some funding for court services, and you also spoke about your prevention programs not being properly funded. How is your funding going? How is the budgets for 2025 and 2026?
Yeah, we did receive an increase through our provincial, through MCCSS, which we were very happy about, for family court as well as some shelter beds. So that was a big win for our sector. We have been doing, as you know, Robert, tireless work of talking about the importance of funding our sector, because even with the funding, we still have to raise a lot of money. We're not adequately funded, but having that increase from our provincial government was great. I'm not going to discount that. It helps tremendously. And it was annualized funding, which was even more exciting because, as you know, and I've talked about, I'm sure, project-specific grants, oh boy. Yeah, it's not a funding model. It's not sustainable. You get a year, you get 2 years, you develop a project program, and you got it for a year or 2 years, and then the funding is lost. So, our nonprofits have, bared that brunt for way too long, that it's just not sustainable. So, thanks to the provincial government, again, this government, through OAIS, our association, who has done tireless work, to advocate to get adequate funding for our sector. They recently listened, and again, our family court support, which has been so underfunded for more than a decade, I want to say, Robert, probably 15, 16 years. We were grossly underfunded, and again, a really important program. So we're going to be able to reach more women that need family court support. So that's really exciting. And also, we receive some funding from the province for what we have considered unfunded beds in the shelter. So it takes a bit of relief off. So that's good news.
Your press release talks about the Wrapped Encourage campaign and the flag raisings and the support from the community. And we see all these pictures and politicians saying how important it is to acknowledge all these important dates and commemorations we talked about earlier. But are these activities and words moving the needle locally? Why or why not?
I think it does. Again, I think municipally we don't receive any municipal dollars. So there's that. I think provincially, I think we do have the ear of the provincial government, this sector, which is interesting. But we have got the ear of them. As I say, I think us being here and staying open during COVID, I think, caught people's attention, because if all of the shelters across women's shelters closed up shop during COVID, we would have been in big trouble, and we didn't. So I think our ability to be a resilient sector, which we are, a resourceful sector, and a sector that doesn't give up, perhaps served us to, again, maintain the ear of the provincial government. So I'm really proud about what OAuth and, EDs across the province continue to do with the province, because that's where we receive our dollars.
And what is OAuth?
OAuth, sorry, is Ontario Association of Interval and Transition Houses.
Last year, when we spoke about the emergency care establishment bylaw, it had just been introduced. Now that we are a year later, how much is it impacting your operation?
It adds another layer to jumping through some hoops and needing to. We just reapplied, so this is our second application. It was fairly straightforward for us, Robert, because we are provincially funded and we're an accredited organization. So we have a lot of rigor already within our operational standards that made it pretty straightforward for us. I think locally, I think our reputation has been quite positive over more than 40 years, which I think allowed us for it to be fairly straightforward for us. So yeah, it's certainly, it's nothing that we wanted. That's for sure. But again, it's something that was put upon us, so we needed to ensure that we worked collaboratively with the town of Cobourg to ensure that we're in compliance with the ECE bylaw, which we have been. We've had an inspection. It ended up being fine. And we will just be submitting our second license renewal, I think is the right word.
What should people watch for in 2026?
I think people should watch for hopefully more prevention programming. Hopefully we can roll out coaching boys into men a little bit more across Northumberland County. So I think our prevention efforts are going to be quite rigorous. We've just begun our strategic planning process. Again, I think education, getting word out across Northumberland County, is very much embedded in there. I think our continued efforts in wellness of our staff is top of the list. We have a dynamic and amazing group of people, but the work is hard. The work is strenuous, so that was sort of something that we will be doing internally anyways, but something that's really important to make sure that our staff are well compensated, are well cared for, so that they continue to do the hard work. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with federal government with Bill C-16. I think that will be fairly interesting. I think it will be interesting to see what happens municipally in the election in October 2026. Yeah, so hopefully, again, we continue to build great partnerships with our community, more education. Yeah, hopefully 2026 is going to be a good year, Robert.
Nancy Johnson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much, Robert.
That was Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.